Utah Governor Gary Herbert addresses Medicaid expansion, guns, and the sequester at his monthly news conference. The legislature debates a suicide prevention bill. And former Governor John Huntsman says he supports gay marriage. You're listening to the KUER News Pod for Friday, February 22nd. I'm Brian Grimmett.
From KUER News in Salt Lake City, I'm Dan Bomas. Utah Governor Gary Herbert says a decision on expanding Utah's Medicaid program may have to wait until summer. Herbert told reporters at his monthly news conference on KUED yesterday that Utah won't follow the lead of any other state on this issue. Herbert says he can call a special session of the legislature if that's necessary to deal with Medicaid. He's leaving for Washington this afternoon to talk about Medicaid, along with the possibility of big federal budget cuts and other issues with the National Governors Association. Governor Gary Herbert says he likes Utah's law on concealed weapons just the way it is. He told reporters at his monthly news conference on KUED yesterday he hasn't made up his mind on a bill that would allow any adult with no criminal record to carry a concealed firearm without a permit.
Kind of the old adage, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, comes to my mind. I do plan to meet with the sponsor of the bill, which I've not had the opportunity to do yet. We're kind of waiting to see these bills come out and see what surfaces and find out what his ideas are and what his motivation is to change the statute.
Herbert says he's a strong supporter of the Second Amendment, but he says Utah needs to look at ways to change the country's culture of violence, including violent movies and video games. Utah's governor is worried about the impact that upcoming federal spending cuts could have on Utah's state budget. Governor Gary Herbert told his monthly news conference on KUED yesterday the so-called sequester could cost the state about $700 million.
We will continue to balance our budgets. We'll make sure that we live within our means. We'll make sure we have a rainy day fund. We'll make sure we do everything we can to empower the private sector to grow the economy. And we will make sure that education is our number one budget priority.
Herbert says he's asked state government agencies to anticipate the worst and plan for that, but he says federal spending is unsustainable and the government must cut its budget. A bill aimed at improving the financial literacy of Utah's public school students has passed the Utah House. Democratic sponsor Patrice Arendt argued the state's existing curriculum is inadequate and out of date.
Utah continues to rank as one of the worst states in the nation for bankruptcy. More than 50% of our households have subprime credit, and nearly half of our students graduate from college with significant debt. This bill will ensure that financial literacy will get the focus it deserves from those who are most knowledgeable about what is happening in the real world.
Senate Bill 43 would create a task force to study and make recommendations to the State Board of Education on how to improve financial and economic literacy education in the public school system. Republican Jim Nielsen spoke up against the legislation, saying schools need to focus on the basics, reading, writing, math, science, and social studies.
What we're doing with this bill is perpetuating the notion that we must distract our schools into other things. I don't think that's the recipe for success, and I ask you to defeat this, and I think we should continue to work to focus the efforts of our schools on the things that matter most.
The bill passed the House 54-16, now heads to the Senate president for his signature. State lawmakers from separate parties in different chambers are finding success in moving anti-bullying and anti-suicide legislation during the legislative session. Democratic Senator Luis Robles and Republican Representative Gage Frorer say when they found out they were working individually on the same issue, they decided to team up. Frorer's bill, HB 134, is a statewide effort to make a dent in the epidemic of teen suicide as well as bullying in schools.
It's interesting that these two bills started out on separate paths, separate chambers, separate parties, and yet we've come together on the main issue, which is to protect our children of this state.
Senator Robles says her SB 184 has the same goal but focuses more on suicide prevention with a plan of action involving everyone concerned.
This is really what these two bills are about, is notification, so there's a conversation, so there's an interaction between the school and parents, so there's a plan to help the children.
Republican Representative Steve Ellison is also working on a suicide prevention bill, HB 154, which calls for a full-time head of a suicide prevention program in Utah.
Every day, there's 2 to 3 students admitted to emergency departments for attempted suicides. Yet, in the state, there's not one full-time person devoted to managing this silent epidemic.
Ellison says he supports the other bills that were discussed and hopes partisan politics doesn't get in the way of the legislation. Furrer says his bill is being held in committee for minor changes. SB 184 from Senator Robles still being considered in the Senate. And Ellison's suicide program bill was introduced in the House this week.
Former Utah Governor John Huntsman announced his support yesterday for the legalization of same-sex marriage in the latest edition of the American Conservative magazine. KUER's Whitney Evans reports.
In the op-ed, Huntsman called on all Republicans to support marriage equality, saying, quote, building a winning coalition to tackle the looming fiscal and trust deficits will be impossible if we continue to alienate broad segments of the population.
He's been an ally for the LGBT community for a very long time.
Brandy Balkin is executive director of Equality Utah. She was not surprised to hear the announcement. As governor of Utah, Huntsman pushed for civil unions in the state, but stopped short of supporting same-sex marriage. Huntsman has since evolved on the issue, an evolution that, from a policy standpoint, Balkin says is taking place in Utah.
You know, a number of the cities and counties who have passed workplace and housing protections were headed by Republican mayors or by Republican council members. And I think that that demonstrates, again, a greater understanding and a greater willingness to include many more voices at the table.
Joel Wright is a Utah County Republican who ran for county commissioner back in 2010. He believes Utah isn't quite ready for full marriage equality, but he recognizes a changing tide in Utah and national politics.
Myself and Governor Huntsman and younger Republicans are deeply concerned about fiscal issues and entitlement issues and what that means to the future of our country. And I think we are not going to be able to get together a majority to win the Electoral College in this next generation unless we bring the gay community and Hispanic community into our party.
Bill Duncan is director of the Marriage Law Foundation. He says Governor Huntsman has pushed a left-leaning agenda on a number of issues and doesn't currently have much sway in Utah politics.
I don't sense that he has a strong constituency in the state that's going to want to say, well, gosh, we were wrong about the way we defined marriage before because, you know, a governor from a number of years ago said that he thinks it's a good idea.
Duncan said if Huntsman were to announce a bid for the 2016 presidential race, Huntsman's position on same-sex marriage would cause him to reevaluate his support for the Republican. The Utah State Republican Party platform recognizes the traditional family as the fundamental unit of society. In his op-ed, Huntsman said, quote, my marriage has been the greatest joy of my life. There's nothing conservative about denying other Americans the ability to forge that same relationship with the person they love. Whitney Evans, KUER News.
The Davis County attorney says his office and FBI are conducting a criminal investigation into allegations that Utah Lieutenant Governor Greg Bell commissioned an audit to interfere with a child welfare case. County Attorney Troy Rawlings says a complaint alleges that Bell asked for a review into the case because he had a personal relationship with someone involved. Governor Gary Herbert says the review was routine oversight. Utah Jazz assistant coach Sidney Lowe has apologized to family and friends after he was arrested on tax evasion charges in North Carolina. In a statement issued by his attorney, Lowe said he takes the charges very seriously. He's accused of failing to file state tax returns in North Carolina in 2009, 2010, and 2011. Before he came to the Jazz, Lowe was head basketball coach at North Carolina State. Joshua Anderson has been serving an 18-month sentence in the Cass County Jail on assault and other charges, but he wanted to go to prison, where he says there's better mental health treatment. So the Logan Herald Journal says Anderson threatened Judge Kevin Allen during a court appearance this week, and the judge sent him to the state prison for up to 10 years. A federal judge in Reno says he won't be able to rule in a case involving a photographer's access to wild horse roundups before the end of March. Laura Lay, a photographer and leader of the group Wild Horse Education, says her press freedom rights were violated when the BLM kept her away from a Mustang roundup near the Utah-Nevada border in 2010. An appeals court overturned Judge Larry Hicks' decision backing the agency and sent the case back to his court. And finally, Betsy Burton reviews a novel whose characters are unconventional in the extreme. She's been reading The Death of Bees by Lisa O'Donnell.
The final two lines in the brief prologue of this extraordinary novel read, "Today I buried my parents in the backyard. Neither of them was beloved." Those terse lines written by 15-year-old Marnie sum up the plot for the death of bees, and perhaps it's often grim humor as well. But they don't begin to evoke its heart, or its funny, scalding, haunting voices. The first belongs to Marnie, the eldest of two sisters, although not old enough to be legally responsible, a fact that necessitates constant subterfuge concerning said dead parents. Marnie must convince all and sundry that they're still alive, or she and her sister will be taken into foster care. Marnie's teenage voice is wise in the ways of the world far beyond her chronological age. Or so she thinks. Her wiseacre voice, rebellious attitude, and hopeless naivete serve as counterpoint to that of her sister Nellie, an 11-year-old who steeps herself in classical music and Victorian literature. The third voice belongs to Lenny, an old man who's gay, whose partner has died, leaving him bereft, and who's been labeled a pervert by the neighbors. Lenny notices the two girls from across his backyard fence, notices that their parents are nowhere in evidence, even as his dog notices an attractive, beckoning odor, attractive at least to a dog, wafting from the girl's yard. We follow Marnie through her daily life in high school, where she clans up with the troublemakers and acts out for all she's worth, even while maintaining good grades due to her love of books. We likewise follow Nellie, who, far from clannish, has no friends at all, and hides not just from people, but from reality. We follow Lenny, as he follows the lives of the two girls from across the backyard fence, until he finally invites them to dinner and into his lonely life, all of which might sound schmaltzy, but is in fact its polar opposite, edgy, funny, and frightening. This is an astonishing first novel, one you won't put down easily, and the characters of which you're unlikely to forget in this lifetime.
And that is your KUER News Pod for Friday, February 22nd. For the latest news and updates from around the state, check out our new free smartphone app that you can download for your iPhone or Android device. Until next time, I'm Brian Grimmett.